This is KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. Everyone needs a safe, decent, stable place to live. For some of the most vulnerable people in America, for the homeless, living on the street is not so much a choice as much as it is part of a crisis. This week on The Compass, we bring you a special program called Homeless Voices. Voices from the shelter, a voice from a wooden tent, a voice from the woods. These are the voices of your neighbors.
Well, I first moved to the area in the mid-80s. Been employed with several different companies, keeping busy. Met my wonderful wife and had a daughter with her. And things didn't go well. Wound up getting a divorce, had to fight for custody of my daughter. Allegations of child abuse. Finally got custody of her, raised her for 10 years. It was wonderful, tough, hard. And just before she turned 16, she wanted to go back to her mom's because she didn't think she could learn any more from me or my mom. So I went ahead and let her go back to her mom's. I became homeless shortly after that, the year after that. Had my own mobile home. Fought to get her on Social Security to pay bills because I couldn't work. She was a special needs child. Pretty much spent a lot of time surfing couches with friends and family. My mom was in the area still. I helped take care of her when she had cancer. Both lung cancer surgeries, I helped her with her healing process. And the last 3 years before she passed, new owner took over the mobile home park where she was at, which is where I used to live, and the new owner wouldn't allow me to be on the property because I had been evicted. Fought for 3 years with him. My mom's cancer came back, and she refused treatment because she didn't want to be 79 and homeless. So I ducked in and out of there to help her when I could. After she passed away, I was hoping that I would be able to move into her house with my daughter and my sister. And the owner bullied my sister, made her sell the house to him, the mobile home to him. Wound up at a friend's house helping him take care of his dad until my friend's girlfriend attacked me with a butcher knife and I wound up in a tent. When it started getting really cold, I came to the shelter. Of course, I've been active here at the post since the early 90s. This is a really tight-knit group of people here. A lot of help from the staff. The last year I've been doing paperwork. Just being able to get in and do the paperwork, especially the last 9 months with the COVID going on, you can't do in-person visits at OLICAP anymore. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I'm a veteran, so I just got my VASH voucher. I have applications to fill out for apartments, and soon I hope I will be out of here. I'd still like to come back down here and help out, you know, where I can, in the kitchen or whatever. That's one of the big hurdles. There's all kinds of housing other places, Sarge's place in Forks, several places in Clallam County. But I've been here for so long, it's just, this is home. The two major jobs I had here in the area were for the grocery industry. First one was a 3-year job, and that was while I was married. And then the second one was for 7 years, so I have a retirement coming at 65, which is a wait.
How old are you now?
60. Most of the time I spend inside here. I bought a PlayStation 4 from a fellow resident that moved back to Idaho for taking care of his family. So I do a lot of video games. Can't put socks on my feet anymore, so It hurts too much. Really, really bad arthritis in the neck, and it's spreading down the spine.
My name is Kimberly, and I ended up staying here because I was living in my truck, and my truck was stolen. And then I stayed outside a couple nights, but it was so cold, and I looked on my phone, and it was the only shelter, was the emergency weather shelter here. And I found Dove House, and they got me in here. But I ended up homeless in the first place because, well, I've struggled with addiction pretty much my whole life, and depression. I've lived with my mom most of my life, so pretty much she enabled me. I've never had to really, like, go grow up or anything, but I took care of her. We took care of each other. She was Native American, so I lived in her tribal house. So when my mom, you know, passed, I couldn't stay in her home, and I never thought my mom would ever leave me, so I didn't, like, plan for the future or whatever, and I had children. My girls were adopted by my oldest daughter, so I had younger kids. There was, like, a huge separation, and they ended up being foster kids, and me and the two girls, we ended up in a women and children's home, but when my daughter turned 18, they put us out, and so I was clean and sober, had my kids back. It was like a miracle. And here the system, like, we ended up in the streets with nowhere to go. And so we got separated, which was really hard. And then that's how I ended up in my truck and ended up here. And then my daughter ended up back in foster. She was a teenager, you know, but they're all adults now. I mean, you know, but I mean, I have like one that's 37 and then one that's turning 21, you know, there's a big difference. Yeah. But I just found myself being 47 years old, having to learn how to be an adult all of a sudden when my mom died, and it's just really hard. Well, if you've had, you know, a record or something, you know, like, people don't want to rent to you, and it's really hard. And not making three times the rent. I get SSI disability, but when you get older, you know, especially if you're a female, you don't have work experience or whatever, if you have a record, it's hard. Like, nobody wants to rent to you if you have drug felonies or whatever, and I have possessions on my record. I have no job experience or whatever. If I did live out of my mom's, it was usually with a boyfriend, you know, and I don't want to be with a man just to have a roof over my head. It's hard. I'm on housing wait lists. I've been on wait lists for almost 5 years. The wait lists are crazy. I've applied for the Section 8 things. I did get on the King County Section 8 thing. I was one of the picked ones, the lottery or whatever. I was so excited. But my number is like 864, and they do 4 a month, and they're already a couple months behind. So it'd be like over 10 years before I even get it. So, I mean, I don't even know if I'll still be alive. I'm now 52, you know. Yeah. It's like, it's so hard. It's frustrating because now, you know, I was trying to find a place so me and my kids could get back together because I want that mom and kid time back. Yeah. And now, like, they're getting older and I'm getting older, and now they're not wanting that because they're wanting their lives now because one got married and, you know, they're not the kids no more. And I still want that. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard. Everything slips by when you're homeless. You come here and you get stuck, and it's comfortable here, you know, and this isn't my forever, you know what I mean? Like, there's no housing anywhere. I just don't know what to do. And I know I could do more, like, you know, I don't put in the applications like I should, but I just feel like it's such, I don't know. It's hard to get the motivation to do it. And then, like, they want $50 or $54 for each application fee, and I feel like I don't have thousands of dollars to just flush down a toilet for them to tell me no because my credit's bad or because I don't have enough credit or whatever. You know, it's, I don't have that. States and towns or whatever, they get all this money for housing, but yet, why aren't they building apartments or even just a piece of land and throw some trailers on there? Or, you know, because homeless people don't care. You know, they say, oh, they have to pass inspection. Well, we don't care. We just want to be sheltered with heat, you know what I mean? Anything. I mean, they always ask, do you think suicidal thoughts? That's the only time I do. is when I'm so cold and can't take it. Like, it's like, I can't live like this, you know? But there's, what can you do? You know, especially with the virus now. You know, you can't sit in a McDonald's and drink coffee or nothing. You can't sit in anywhere. You know, it's really bad. Thank God for this place.
My name's Dallas Wisby. I'm from Shelton, Washington. I've been in and out of Port Town since I was 6 years old, and I'm 57 years old. 8 years in combat. The United States Navy, NAF Oceana, Virginia Beach, Virginia, and a forward deployed A6 squadron. We were on the front line of the Atlantic, Mediterranean, South America, and Africa. From 1985 through 1992 is when I got out, after I got stationed at Whidbey Island. I've been on and off homeless only after my elders died. That's one of the reasons why I left the Navy. I spent 8 years honorably. I've also been a member of this post. I'm also a 40 and 8er, which means I install officers throughout the United States of America for the American Legion and vote for veterans' rights. As I said, I've been in and out of this town since I was 6 years old, and we'd come over here in the Cub Scouts and volunteer to earn our badges. So we'd meet people in this community as a volunteer, be able to camp out in the parks and stuff, and it was great. That was a long time ago. My VA home loan home is just being able to go out, find a piece of property. Tell you the truth, I got a DUI, and 1 month before I'm finishing it, my treatment through the VA. I got a 72-hour pass to get out of the hospital to go be with my missus. Mm-hmm. I was home 15 minutes, found out my father died, so I had to put my clothes on, go over there. The cremation, the death certificate, so I went way over the time. VA violated me to Mason County for my DUI, and I had to do it again. So instead of 2 years, I did four. Through treatment, I think that was enough. No, don't get me wrong. I still smoke cigarettes and have cocktails. But it's not like it used to be. When my brother Edwin died here in this town as a homeless man, y'all provided $500 to help me for his cremation. Took that there. That really helped me out. Tell you the truth, I love you all. I don't know how long I'm going to be here, and it's nothing derogatory, because I'll always come back through here as long as I'm alive. But if my life takes me somewhere else and I'm happy in it, so be it. Yeah, it gets cold, but there's plenty of clothing. As a child, I grew up as an Arctic scout and midwife on gold claims. Like on an average day, being I'm retired, I'll go have a couple beers. I had Thanksgiving off, so I went from Whidbey Island over here. I ran into Roger and his family, and they adopted a vet take home for Thanksgiving. So I spent the whole weekend with them. And now I'm here as a civilian. It's great, because they're still my friends.
I was living in Cape George in a village, and the owner of the house, it was just going, it was a month-to-month basis, and her son was having a tough time. He was moving up here from out of state and having a tough time finding a rental, and so out of the go. You know, that's nothing personal, that's just how it goes. You know, I really kind of didn't think of that being, something that was going to happen to me, but it really set the stage for a downward spiral for me, because I've never had this much trouble bouncing back or finding a rental of any kind. You know, it's like, that's just no problems to do. And all you have to do is plug into some work. But, with coronavirus, my work slowed down as a handyman. So, it's it's better for me to work for somebody else. And since my child support got backed up and stuff, I lost my license. I'm working on that, getting it back. And without a license, I mean, I have a Jimmy, but I can't drive it, you know? So it's hard to take somebody seriously for a real job when you don't have a license. I got backed up on my child support. But yeah, it's not out of reach. It's just, I gotta, you know, I mean, I thought I was gonna have to get a job like a padlock building supply or something real close that I could walk to. Mm-hmm. I've never really had problems keeping a job once I have it. But I mean, just the fact that I could have my food here, I don't have to go all the way across town on a bus to get, take a shower. That helps tremendously. And yeah, and then I can lock the door. I mean, that helps a lot because, I mean, you know, I've had, through this whole experience, I've had problem with people stealing my stuff, and which is, you know, Free Store and Goodwill are my friends.
And what would you, was there anything from the your experience at the campgrounds that you think worked well among the community? I mean, is there a community growing out there? What are your kind of your takeaway from living at the fairgrounds?
No, there was a little bit of stealing at first, and then there's some person leaving needles around or left a needle somewhere. Really, it's just a couple of bad seeds. Basically, we had to take it upon ourselves to root out the ones that was stealing. And then when it just comes down to, you know, you just kind of police the place a little bit, you know, and it, not just a certain couple people. It's like, you know, we kind of got together to do that because, I mean, this was difficult because everybody is in a bad situation and fun to be in that position. And especially with the weather, I mean, it was making it miserable. You know, my tent, I spent $200 on the tent used because mm-hmm. it was big enough to where I could walk in it and had some rooms and stuff. And so I could set up like a kitchen and all that stuff and mm-hmm. and a bed. And it's like, it was just crushing down on the poles were breaking. And I'm lucky that I got to get in here when I did because my tent was destroyed. It was taken to the dump. Wow. It sounds funny, but I had to make a lot of repairs. I mean, it was actually constant work with the maintenance of that, of a tent and keeping it standing because it was 2 months I was there.
Wow. Yeah.
2 months, and there was a lot of windstorms. Mm-hmm. Living in a tent is something I never pictured myself ever doing, ever. You know, I mean, I was almost grimaced at the fact that I was going to get a mobile home and you know, because I'd never lived in a mobile home. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, from there, I mean, like I said, yeah, when I lost that, I couldn't find anything. I also have, you know, a criminal history that didn't help. I make myself sound way worse than I am. But yeah, I mean, there is one certain thing that's like, you know, people just have a hard time giving me a job or a home or anything. So this was a golden opportunity for me. I want my daughter to be living with me. Mm-hmm. She's 13 now. So, yeah, this is humbling as well. I mean, you know, and that's part of my problem. I mean, it's hard to get over some of the losing my license and, you know, my daughter's mom just died a couple of weeks ago. She was fighting for cancer, and I wasn't able to what I needed to be able to take her. And but it's already. Yeah, there's just a lot that it takes out of your self-esteem, and you know. Because, man, I'd never seen, like I said, I'd never seen myself being in that position. I was always a great dad, and, you know, mm-hmm. I thought, maybe, you know. But, you know, things pile up on you, and losing confidence and losing self-esteem is a huge, huge anchor that is hard to bounce out of. And because you end up faking it until you make it, kind of, so to speak. You know, I'll sit there, fake a smile. You know, when I'm depressed, really depressed, I'll fake a smile and I'll joke around a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if somebody, you know, actually laughs at my joke or, you know, jokes around a little bit back at something, you know, then it makes it genuine. And, you know, then I get a real smile going. And that's the kind of stuff I need to, you know, and it's hard when, you know, people are all giving you judgment and, you know, at least, you know, the people that you feel you have to deal with or that has what you need. I've always had a problem asking. I could not go out and fly a sign. I just for some reason can't do it. It's like I tried it once and I was just holding. No, I can't do it. I won't do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Because I'm an able body and I can work. So I mean, you know, I just, hey, I need work. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm a hard worker. But you know, 8 years of roofing just beat me up. And I got and I got gout. You know, so it's like, you know, I mean, I really need to. Turn it down. I'm a carpenter. That's what I want to plan on keep doing, but, you know, roofing, no.
When you're out here, it's all a matter of what you put in, you get it right back. And if you have a positive mindset, if you are trying, it's noted. Hopefully what I did was good. If not, I don't eat. You know, if it wasn't the right aligned choice for myself, mm-hmm. I will know. There will be the disturbance in the force.
Ember, yeah. How long you been on the road?
See, 18, I'm 36, so it's like half my life. But there's been, you know, when I was younger, of course I was pretty, and people were like, yeah, you can stay on our couch. So I did a lot of couch surfing. I would go to take care of elderly, you know, like they would need someone just to be there, at like comfort, and hey, I need to lift that off the top shelf. Do you think you could help me get my meals on wheels, you know, from the door and bring it to me? You know, I have trades that are in the caretaking field. Now, I don't have a GED. I had, like I was telling you, I had a colostomy bag at 18. I had an emergency surgery because I have Crohn's disease. So that put everything on hold. And so I wasn't able to get a GED. I've tried so hard to get one, but my brain just does not want to remember what they taught me because it's not true, not all of it. And it's very hard to remember things that aren't true. I'm legally blind. I'd said my brother passed away at 10 months. I was almost two. My blindness came on right about that time. And from then it was like one led to another to where by the time I was 12, you know, I developed asthma and all this stuff. And then I developed Crohn's. And so it really made getting through high school very difficult, you know. So it was like, and at that time I got diagnosed, I was like, no, I'm going to join the Army. I'm going to have them pay for my schooling, and I'm going to be a career woman. Then I'll have a family, and then, you know, whatever. And life just was like, no, no, you can do much more than you're giving yourself credit for. So it's all about sometimes being out here is more about opening your horizons to other possibilities. There's no place for me, right? They people want you to get in place. Everyone's single file. Life said, hey, you're something different. I like going to smaller communities because for what I do, I have more chances of being seen by the people in that area to where people can make the most out of me being there. Because you don't know how long, I don't even know how long I'm going to be in an area. This is the longest, over a year and a half, that I've been in any place. So when I got here and I saw the forest, noticed how it'd been treated, I was like, huh, well, I'm gonna go back down to Oregon. And I did a lot of canning. You know, I made $800 in 1 month because I was just like, I need to go back up there so that I have money put aside. I didn't know how the community would take me in, but I didn't want to be begging. I'm not the beggar. I'm the person that, like, was it last year before last 2019, I would sit there and wave on Friday at Safeway. That was me. And that was how I kind of like made myself known, like, all right, well, pockets are empty. It's energy, you know, like money is a form of energy. It's an exchange. So if you are available to say, hey, if I can give it, I'll give it. That's you're just that kind of person. It comes back, especially out here. It all matters on how you think and see things. You know, your perception, perspective, everything. I have my dog, Jasper. He's like right here. And so we're just walking the road, picking up cans as we go. And I mean, I would have like, I would walk 8 miles and have $10. Oh, okay. So by the time I get to the next town, I got a place where I can cash them in and get a bus. And now I got money to eat and get on the bus. Being legally blind, he helps for a lot of things. And the Crohn's disease, like I never knew that it's not really something you can teach a dog, like how to help you with that. But I you know, I guess there's a few things where I'm like, Los Baños, and he like goes straight to a bathroom. Wherever I'm at, he makes sure that I don't get, because especially when it starts to wash over me, like all the pain from Crohn's, it's sometimes hard for me to distinguish where I'm at and where I'm going, but I just need to go to a bathroom or something. And so I just tell him, and he's like, oh, he knows how to find a bathroom. And I remember the first time I was like, oh my God, you knew where I was going. Thank you, buddy. I had to get to the bathroom. Oh, wow. And from the first time, everything has changed, mind you, right? Like, everything has changed. It's, so I have family that's outside the country. And so that requires me to have a smartphone. I don't really necessarily need minutes, but I do need Wi-Fi. So, most notably, I'll wake up in the morning, greet my dog, tell him, you know, good morning, how are you? And he gives me love, and I think, okay, so look at the phone. Okay, I need a charge. If I need anything for the day, I make sure I take one of the first buses down. We're not really, like, in the elements for too long, especially being winter time, and there's less opportunity for places to charge, and you can't be indoors. I'd rather be out in the elements. I love to sing, and I love being in forests because birds, owls, I get tons of company. I may sound crazy to most people, but I think there is a place in this world for every single person, whether you like the person or not. To see my brother and my dad and my mom again, they're in the Philippines. This country is, unfortunately, and it's not everybody's fault, but separating families has been an issue, an ongoing issue for a long time. I'm not a child, but given my history, I've done the best with what I've got, and I'm not wanting anyone to pity me. But at the same time, you need ID to get ID, and if you don't have any family in the States, who's gonna vouch for you? A rock in a hard place is a horrible place to be, and once you can feel, and once, everyone knows what family feels like. It's that exact energy and that emotion of when you go someplace, you're like, everyone's wanting me here. Most people would just write you off. It's like when it's blood, oh man, I know that if I were to show up right now, I would just be in a flood of tears because it's been 12 years since I've seen my family, literally blood relatives. And not from head to toe that matters. So senator, so janitor, so long for a while, remember you're never fully dressed. Though you may wear the best, you're never fully dressed without a smile. Oops, you can hear Jasper now. He's like, I heard you singing.
You do hear your singing.
Yeah.
He's calling you.
Well, you know, I tell people, I'm like, he's my guide dog, but I am his emotional support human. I sing to him when we're in motion so that he's like, all right, I hear you. You're good. We're good. We're good.
This week's Compass was written and produced by Chris Bricker and Jefferson County Commissioner Greg Brotherton. The Compass airs every Saturday at noon and repeats the following Monday at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream live 24 hours a day. Executive producer for Compass is Steve Evans. Music for today's program came from True Story, composed and performed by Barbara Higby on Windham Hill Records. For the news team at KPTZ 91.9 here in Port Townsend, this is Chris Bricker.